Our conversation today will help product leaders learn an entirely new perspective when it comes to building and running your product team. We've got Brian Crofts, Chief Product Officer at Pendo, joining us. Pendo is a product analytics platform that drives product adoption, customer loyalty, and team innovation. Coming from Intuit, Brian learned how to focus on innovation and customer delight.
Going from working from the mindset of a product manager for mainly B2C companies, Brian had an opportunity to embrace a new challenge, building products for a B2B software world.
One of the things that's very different when you move from B2C to B2B is when you work with the customers, so not even just product managers or whatever, when you work with the customers of B2B software, they're incredibly rational. In other words, their feedback is very valuable. Where consumer, it's irrational and it's erratic and it's very hard to predict.
And why is that?
You're building products that help people do their jobs, right? So it's not a, you know, trivial feedback like on for Instagram or anything. It is like, I need it to do this to help me do my job, which pays me so I can pay my bills and provide for my family. So it's very practical.
Along with shifts in his career, Brian has seen shifts happen with how products are built. With the realization and rise of product-led growth, we were curious about how he has seen product management shift and how those shifts have impacted the way he approaches building product teams.
So one of the things, like I would say, in terms of the evolution of the actual team itself has been the product ops team. So that's kind of, if you think about a modern product team, it looks very similar to what it did a few years ago with the addition then of product operations.
Product ops? Now that's a new one. Let's start our conversation there with understanding how Brian defines product ops.
So product ops for us really has three major components that tie into the team. One is they're a big input into prioritization because they represent those stakeholders I mentioned, like customer success and sales. So as you know, like any sales team is getting feedback in terms of feature gaps that drive win-loss. We have CSMs that are working with customers that also have, you know, feedback or product requests. And so because they're engaging with those stakeholders, they are an input into our prioritization for our roadmap. The other thing that they do is they help facilitate launch readiness. So obviously a product manager is very focused on ensuring that they're building the right thing for the right customer at the right time. And so we take this idea of launch readiness and the cadence of training enablement and, you know, organizational readiness to launch a new product. That's on product ops. And then just overall delivery status and communications to the broader organization about how we're executing against our bets and against our roadmap. And so we really leverage them to take stuff off the product manager's plate so they can focus on discovery and delivery against our strategy.
You're the chief product officer at Pendo. Does product ops fall under your team?
Yeah, so the way we're organized today, and again, probably no organization is designed as perfect, but I have three kind of main direct reports. So actually I have more than that, but my main lines are product design and product management. And in product management, we have our director of product ops. So, and it's because product management and these product ops are so closely linked that it's really important it's under one leader. And then I have a couple other direct reports that drive business development, corporate development, and then we have some platform initiatives. But yeah, product ops is technically in our organization part of the product management group that rolls up on.
And do you think that I've heard this ops team taken? So I think the first time I heard it was DevOps several years ago. And in my background being design, I hear a lot about design ops. My understanding is that it's at least in those cases, for more mature, larger organizations. Do you think that that's true with product ops as well? Does it fit in at a particular stage of a product company, or is it something that you should have from the outset as an early stage startup?
I think once you have, I mean, I think critical mass is a relatively small number. I think if you have two or three product managers and two or three designers, you know, you've got a handful of scrum teams and you're probably shipping a handful of stuff every quarter. And so if you even start with one person whose responsibility is to gather and to prioritize inputs from the front lines, as well as help with launch readiness to ensure that, even from early stage, that things are delivered on time and they're communicated and salespeople are trained and enabled. It's a little bit, there's another overlap between kind of this and product marketing. So if you think about product marketing, building and developing the content and the messaging and some of the other enablers for the sales team, this is just a little bit more on the kind of pragmatic side of just readiness and connecting all the dots. And so I do see there is value from day one, once you have a handful of product people on your team. And then, of course, as it scales, it just becomes that much more critical.
So you mentioned that the product ops team, one of their functions is to kind of hold the product managers accountable to like the bets that they're making, for example. So it sounds like they would have some interaction with a growth team, kind of ensuring that, again, like you said, that the things they're saying to be true or the things they think will happen, their hypothesis are being confirmed.
Yeah, I mean, I think for our team, like growth is a bit of a, you know, a catch-all. Like, you know, everything we do right now is oriented towards growth. And so with that said, we're starting to spin off a specific growth team, and I can talk about the difference between that. But yeah, it wouldn't be any different, right? It would be, if whether it's a specific growth team or a feature product team that's focused on building things for growth, it's at the end of the day, it's to your point, it's being able to be clear about our hypotheses, clear about whether it's the experiments or the discovery that we're going to do, and then being able to place bets. And we can either place big ones and ensure that they go well, or a bunch of little ones, you know, based on like what we're trying to answer. So there's not, in my mind, a lot of difference. It's just maybe a different stage, a different focus, a different outcome. But, you know, if you were to just pop in and look at the teams, I don't think you would notice anything too different from team to team.
And piggybacking off of that, you mentioned, you know, product teams not necessarily owning P&L, but if that's the case and the product ops team is overseeing the success of these bets, then ultimately, where does that responsibility lie? How do you divvy up responsibility for retention, or do you have some accountability on the product ops side for that?
Well, I mean, just to be clear too, like it's not, you know, the idea that product ops is holding product management accountable maybe sounds a little bit more harsh than it really is. I think think of them as kind of the record keepers and keeping us on track and making sure that we're, you know, that there's some continuity in our strategy and what we've decided to do, and they help us kind of stay on track there. I think from like the bigger question around, you know, responsibility and ownership, you know, at the end of the day, like if you're on my team and if you're on the product team, you know, you're a leader in the business. And so I would say the goals around attrition and retention and acquisition are very much of a mindset versus like they actually report out on how we're doing vis-a-vis our goals and KPIs. I think, you know, ultimately, we have a chief revenue officer who reports out and technically owns those numbers. But the way that we act and the mindset when we engage with these different cross-functional teams is that we are doing this to help grow the business. We are doing this to retain customers, to create happier customers, increase our NPS, and ultimately build a big business so that we can do more innovation and have more impact on the world. So it's more of a mindset than think of it like as versus like a reporting structure.
I was really hoping product ops had like uniforms and it was much more official, but something to consider. On that subject, you mentioned a mindset. So we don't touch on culture and leadership a lot in this particular podcast, but I think the way that you're talking is important to touch on because you mentioned a mindset a few times, and I think I would love to understand, how do you foster that type of culture, the collaborative nature that actually makes sure everybody's doing that? What are some things that you have to actually put in place to encourage that in your teams?
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, culture. I've been asked a lot about culture lately and like, what is it and why is it important? And, you know, I've been reflecting a lot on it, and it's, you know, culture is interesting because culture, whether good or bad, it really kind of helps you make decisions and it helps you know how to behave and know how to act. And I would say we haven't perfected it by any means. And we believe that you know, culture is something that is developed trial and error and over time. But we, you know, at the end of the day, we, you know, we talk a lot about what inspires us, about what motivates us. And at the end of the day, there is a shared mindset and a belief that I think, again, fuels culture around really trying to create a category and create a solution that's been missing in the marketplace for a long time. And you know, I really do think we're in the golden age of product management. And to kind of be, you know, here at this time, working with these types of teams and trying to listen and create tools that will help ultimately help the world become better and, you know, because of better software and be better tools. And so, you know, I think, you know, we're all like everybody that is here kind of believes in that mission and believes that they're part of that. And I think the thing that really kind of helps support it is, you know, because they are in this space and because it's their craft, they get to talk about it and teach it and speak on it and write about it. And I think it's just I think it's just really self-reinforcing, you know, and it's not, of course, it takes work on our end, but not too much. It's just something I think that stems from belief and inspiration and motivation.
So if you imagine talking to a PM for a product company, you know, an early stage startup, maybe, you know, 20 employees that's trying to understand, okay, what is it like to create a culture? What would be the first thing that a head of product should be doing as they start building out the product team in a company like that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, I think one of the first ways to establish a particular culture, at least like if I imagine like I'm starting something new and I want to create a particular culture that's focused around the customer, the very first thing I would do is not to talk about it, but to get out of the office, out of the building, and to go meet and start observing customers and spending time with them and building empathy and kind of a day in the life. And you start to think about what are those types of things that we can do as a team that all of a sudden reinforce that what later becomes a very clearly articulated culture. So imagine day one, you're out with customers. It's not too much of a stretch that a year later, when you're writing down your values or you're describing your culture, that you describe it as one that's very, has a maniacal focus on customer. And then it's, you know, then you think, well, if you have a maniacal focus on the customer, what does that mean? Well, it means that I actually would make a decision. Maybe it doesn't look strategic, but I'm going to spend time with this one customer and make this one customer happy and not worry about the many for a minute. And all of a sudden, like because of that first day or that first week or that first month, you're starting to create an organization where they know it's important to spend time with the customer. And so you think about that from that angle, and then you start to add more things that are important to you. And all of a sudden you start to have a culture. On the flip side, if on day one, somebody comes up with an idea and you say, that's a horrible idea, we should do it this way. Well, then you're creating a culture as well, but it's one that's potentially negative. And it reinforces the idea that the highest paid person gets the vote and everybody else should just execute. And, you know, and that's a culture too. And it teaches the way that you should interact and behave within the walls of that company. And so I think, you know, if it's early on and it's an early product team, those first few weeks are really important because you're making a statement about what's important to you. It ties to your, you know, belief system. And it's a very organic, natural evolving thing. And at the end of the day, you are exactly what your culture is. And if somebody from the outside walks in and they spend time in meetings and they'll be able to articulate it, and it's either good or bad or somewhere in between. But it's a very interesting thing. It's a very interesting topic. And then, of course, my last comment would be, then within a company, there is a subculture within the product. It should be aligned with the company, but there are probably specific things within a product team that are specific from a cultural perspective. And I think it's very organic, and day one is just as important as the last.
No, I think it's great advice, and I think we've heard obviously themes about getting out of the office, and for Anna and I, having, you know, come from the UX background, that's sort of what we're trained to do. I think it's still a good reminder that to start with a culture is to start with those behaviors, and there's I've definitely, as a designer, gotten a little bit too into my own designs for the sake of the design. And sometimes that can be getting away from the end customer. So instilling that culture early to show, like, the values start with customers, not the people inside the office here. So everything is geared towards that. I think it's very simple, and it is actually simple enough that it can get lost even in the early days. So it's good advice.
Agree. And you know, it's at the end of the day, like, I think all of us are learning to try to become more intentional about what we do, right? So to say that day one or week one, I'm going to be so intentional to go to a customer visit because I want to start laying the foundations of my culture. Well, that's, wow, that's really intentional, you know, and I don't know, you know, I think that only comes with maturity and experience, but I think that's the thing that we're all striving for is, you know, no matter decisions we make or what we, how we behave, we always, I think, want to be known as somebody that's intentional and thoughtful about what we're doing, that it's for a reason, not just random.
Everything you mentioned about kind of, you know, we're in the golden age of product management. I think, you know, we're in the golden age of product analytics as well, probably, or at least we're on the rising into the golden age with, you know, especially the rise in product-led growth and product taking a bigger view when it comes to conversion and revenue and things like that. So I'm curious, as, you know, as someone who builds a tool who enables product-led growth in many ways as well, kind of what trends are you, what things are you seeing around product-led growth and what things are you kind of excited about?
Yeah, so I think the thing that I'm most excited about with product-led growth is, so it might be counterintuitive, but it has nothing to do with the product team itself. You know, I think when people first hear product-led growth, they think, wait, so product is leading the company, like the team, the CPO, like what does that mean? And, you know, as I've spent time in it and unpacked it a bit, what it means to me is what everybody else in the organization is doing to be product-led growth. So for example, the way I, you know, and I've read material, so I hope I'm not, I'm just sharing what I've read. I don't want to assume that this is, these are all my original thoughts, but there are things that have resonated with me. So for example, to be a product-focused company, it means that your prospects are able to experience the value of a product before they even talk with the sales rep. It means that if you are using the product, you can accomplish all these kinds of important jobs and you don't need to reach out to a customer success manager, right? Or technical support. If you're in marketing, you're relying in on the product so much that you're enabling people to market it for you and to talk about it and to share stories. And so it all comes back to having an amazing product, but it's how does the rest of the business leverage that amazing product to accomplish their very traditional goals, like increasing sales, increasing work, you know, driving marketing and, you know, qualified leads and customer success, having good metrics. Like that to me is like where the clarity of what product-led growth comes in is. It puts the onus on an amazing product, which we already feel like we all want to create a better product. But there's very practical and business outcomes that are related to having a great product. And so that's, I love that because it puts the onus and responsibility back on the product team, but then it pushes out the responsibility to say, how are you going to leverage our amazing product to accomplish your goals?
Yeah, that's really well said.
It's like a JFK of product. It's like, ask not what you can do for your product, ask what your product can do for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I imagine like a sales team saying, look, we really love the product, but we really need a free version that people can experience all this value by trying these things and doing these things so that when I call them, they're like, where do I sign? You know, and that's the kind of conversations that I think are, you know, going to become more and more interesting. And, you know, circling back to where we began, which is, you know, if we're ultimately now more and more tied to business outcomes, this is a great way for the product team to engage with the business because you start to see the alignment naturally occur versus, and I think in the past it was, you know, too siloed.
I think a lot of times there's communication breakdowns between sales and product because they may not have that culture instilled to say, hey, the product should be facilitating your job. And that's what I'll say to salespeople is, Have you looked to the product team to see how they can help you tell better stories with your prototypes? Or if you're doing demos, can they help facilitate those stories you're telling? And I think a lot of times that communication does break down because it doesn't occur to people initially that, hey, the product team can help. And to your point, with the right product-led culture outside the product team, it starts to put the accountability back on the product team to not just, you know, serve the customer, but also to make sure that they're building a product that marketing can look to help them do their job.
Yeah, I mean, it really is like a really nice flywheel, right? Because if, you know, the more people outside of product are leveraging the product to do their job, the more emphasis and call it support or investment the business is going to want to put into the product. And you just see this nice flywheel of activity that really ultimately everybody benefits, which is at the end of the day, it's a better product. And I think, you know, ultimately, you know, that's what, you know, drives all of our, you know, passion is like, can you imagine having the best product in the market for this particular series of jobs? And then to have a sales force that has unnatural confidence in selling it because they know that. And to be able to have customers talk about real life stories of how it saved, you know, saved them time or, you know, improved their life. Like that's where it's like, okay, yeah, this is worth spending more time away from my family than being with them because I'm making this type of difference. So it really is a great thing. And I'm glad the industry and, you know, is talking about this stuff more because I think there's a lot of value.
Next week, we're joined by Laura Borghese from MongoDB to discuss how you can introduce product-led growth when you're in a traditional sales-led organization. Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Until then, visit innovatemap.com/podcast and subscribe to learn how you can take your product to the next level. As always, we're curious, what does better product mean to you? Hit us up on Twitter at InnovateMap or shoot us an email at podcast@innovatemap.com.
I'm Christian.
And I'm Anna. And you've been listening to Better Product.
Better Product.
Drop mic.